97.5, 1280 The Zone and the Zone Sports Network. Hans and Scotty, live here at Larry H. Miller Used Car Supermarket. You and I have talked a lot of Jazz today. The Jazz season is over. A lot of great media availability yesterday, in which you heard from pretty much everybody outside of Donovan and Jordan Clarkson were the only two that did not address the media. But some interesting things. And remember, this is a Jazz team that came into that Game 6 with Mike Conley battling the hamstring, Donovan Mitchell battling the ankle injury. I think had it been just a regular game, you wouldn't have seen either one of those two participate. They tried to give it a go. Donovan was great as usual. I think Conley did the best he could considering the circumstances, but neither of those guys were even remotely close to 100%. And during his interview yesterday, you heard from Dennis Lindsay talk a little bit about trying to bring those guys back.
We really appreciate Mike Conley attempting to play last night. As he mentioned, there was some, just some struggles on return to play. And we tried to, as you guys know, our health performance staff is, we never from an ownership management coaching level ever put any pressure on a guy that's got to play. I saw as an example, Pop do it several times where in playoff series that the players weren't going to play, even if it was at the detriment of the result. And obviously we treated Mike with great patience, care, kid gloves. And then ultimately, as most of you know, the players participate kind of in the return to play process, and he really wanted to play given the stakes. And as much as anything, as you, all of you know, he's first class in every way. And it was a, in my opinion, a very notable and noble attempt. It really was. And then same thing for Don. Jeff Van Gundy had a great quote on NBA players, because so much of the season is more about survival than it is necessarily winning any one game. That's why we call it last team standing. Don really, his performance was heroic. The fact that he played his best when his best was needed, and yet it was clear that he was suboptimal, was beyond remarkable. It speaks to his physical talent, his mental toughness, perseverance. You guys saw when he landed. In some ways, it will get lost because, we didn't accomplish the goal of being the last team standing or certainly getting to the finals. But it was a remarkable thing to watch him go through Memphis and the Clippers and play in such a dynamic way when, as he stated, it's clear that he wasn't 100%.
So take us through an athlete's perspective. It's game six. You're down 3-2. You're banged up. You're not in a great place at all physically, but you're hearing your fan base clamoring for you, especially if you're Mike Conley. And I don't know if you got wind of this, but Mike had media availability before game five when I think a lot of us thought he was coming back. He wasn't, and mentioned he had a setback between games two and game three on that hamstring. And usually anytime he's had any hamstring issue, it's been at least 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. So he was only about 6 days in between re-injuring that hamstring and getting back out there.
So he went out June 2nd.
Yeah.
In game five against Memphis.
Yeah.
And then came back June 18th.
Yep.
In game six against the Clippers. So about a 16-day,
yep,
but in the middle of that.
But in the middle of it, he hurt it again.
Had a setback.
Yeah.
Which is a major issue to have a setback like that in such a critical time. That would be extremely frustrating. So, Scotty, I wouldn't hear the fans at all. I wouldn't hear.
And I don't think he did either.
I wouldn't hear a single fan. I would hear my teammates. And every day, I promise you, somebody's walking by, whether it's Joe or Jordan Clarkson or Donovan Mitchell. Somebody's walking by and saying, hey, how do you feel? How are you feeling today?
Yeah.
And you want to be able to look them in the eye and say, I feel great, man.
We're getting close.
Yeah, it's on, because then it sparks this emotional fire of,
yeah,
let's go. Let's go get this done. And, you know, I think he probably felt a lot of pressure from his teammates in such a critical moment in the postseason, which led to him coming back, which led to 26 minutes of noticing that Mike Conley's not ready to be back on a court. It was obvious to me within the first 2 minutes of seeing him on the court.
Yeah.
I was like, nope.
Yeah.
It wasn't as...
His presence still was better than the alternative. I don't think he hurt the team, but he wasn't a huge help.
It may have been a detriment only because he's occupying a spot that maybe somebody a little more healthy could have emphasized defense or could have done something a little bit more athletically, defensively maybe. But you're right. It's not like he absolutely killed the team. He was 1 of 8 from the field, 1 of 6 from three. Hit a couple of shots from the free throw line. But it wasn't like watching Anthony Davis come back on the court. You remember Anthony Davis with the groin got back on the court and was like, oh, that's just a complete throw out.
The game in which Joel Embiid went 0 for 12 and missed a layup that he probably would have dunked that would have given Philly a win against Atlanta.
Yeah.
I mean, there was some problems there.
Yeah. So Mike Conley, his 26 minutes, it was notable. I think there are some people that are trying to take a shot at Quinn Snyder for trying it or pushing it too long or trying it for too long. Until you're in that moment and you've got Mountain Mike out there and you're excited to see him back on the court and you feel like he's doing good things in certain areas and you feel like, no, I still feel like we're better with him on the court and bringing Joe Ingles off the bench for a certain amount of minutes. I guess I trust Quinn Snyder to the point where I believe he did his best with what he had in front of him.
I agree with you on that. But the problem is it's patchwork. You don't have the athleticism because of the injuries and the personnel to go toe-to-toe with everybody. And so with that, you've got to pick your poison. Jazz went with trying to protect the rim, and Terrence Mann happened.
I look at all the lines. I look at the Utah Jazz and the lines from pretty much everybody across the board. I want Jazz fans to understand that the Jazz shot 47.7% from three in this game. They went 21 of 44. They were just above their team season average, or they were quite a bit above their team season average. What were they, 41% as a team through the regular season? So they shot well. I want people to understand Donovan goes 9 of 15 from 3 and ends up with 39 points. That wasn't just a noble performance. That was an exceptional performance offensively by Donovan to do what he did. You know, you had two double-doubles. You had a double-double from Rudy Gobert, and you had a double-double from Royce O'Neal. Both of them put up double digits in points and rebounds and gave you what they could. You fall short in depth. You fall a little bit short in depth. You fall a little bit short in maybe some areas defensively, not being able to cover up Terrence Mann, or maybe that was the game plan. I don't know which it is.
Yeah.
And you put up 119 points in a loss.
Yeah, it was all defense. To me, the defense was, in those four losses, it all came down to defense.
When was the last time you saw 81 points and a half?
And frankly, I think it was like 81 points in 20 minutes almost. I mean, it was pretty remarkable.
I can't believe what they were able to do. I remember looking at the score and that Jazz 25-point lead. Where were we in the game at that point? Just the beginning of the third?
Yep. Started second half, yeah.
Yeah, just the beginning of the third.
That was Donovan's first bucket.
And I remember looking at that thinking, there's just no way.
Yeah.
there's no way they give up this lead. The Clippers don't have Kawhi to make the press. Playoff P isn't going to do this by himself. I just remember thinking, there's just no way. And I wonder if there was a part of the Jazz that were thinking, there's just no way.
Yeah.
We got this thing wrapped up. Then Terrence Mann happens.
And Terrence Mann happened. 81 to 47 was your scoring discrepancy in the second half.
Oh, that gives me a massive headache for Jazz fans and for these Jazz players. You know, you try not to get caught up in emotionally, but I will tell you, I even got caught up emotionally. Which series was it, Scotty, where they gave up a 21-point lead? 22.
Was it Memphis? Well, I remember that Memphis, Memphis they were up 21, and the Grizzlies come back and take a 2-point lead, and then the Jazz end the game on like a 14-3 run and end up winning the game.
Oh, that's right. That was a big one.
Yeah.
But there was another series. Might have been a Philly game.
Are you talking about? You mean the Jazz in the regular season, or
no? I'm talking about another. I think it might have been
Philly gave up. I think it was a 26-point lead to Atlanta.
That's what it was.
Yeah. Yeah.
Even then, I felt like the depths of sickness for Philly, thinking, yeah, how could you do that? I remember looking at that game and thinking, the Jazz better never do that. They better never do something stupid like that. I've got an old teammate who lives in Philly, and he posted on Facebook about giving up that lead and how embarrassed he was. And I was going back and forth with him on Facebook, giving him a hard time.
Yeah.
Saying, man, you better get your boys right over there, because that's embarrassing.
So the Jazz, let's see here, at 11:36. So, yeah, the first shot of the second half, as Lloyd said, Donovan takes that step back three. It's 75-50. The Jazz lead by 25. And then Paul George with a dunk, Terrence Mann with a three, and it escalates from there. I mean, it's down to – but, you know, the other thing, too, is remember the Clippers got it down to 14, and then the Jazz were able to push it all the way back to 21 with 7:13 left to go in the game.
In the game.
And so it was 85-64 with 7:13 left in the third quarter.
In the third.
Yeah. And then that's when it really got out of hand after that. Because you thought, okay, well, there was their push. There, you know, they took a shot, and the Jazz sent them packing. And little did we know that the Clippers were going to end up scoring nearly 70 more points in the last 19 minutes of the game.
Yeah, you know, the other hard thing to do, the other thing that's kind of difficult, is I know that we're talking about Terrence Mann, and he was the difference.
Yeah.
He was. Offensively, he was the difference for the Clippers. But one of the more difficult things to do is to take off your hat to Paul George a little bit.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You know, you look at in that four-game winning streak that the Clippers went on to shut that series down, these were Paul George's numbers. 31 points, 5 assists, 3 rebounds. Game number 4, 31 points, 4 assists, 9 rebounds. Game number 5, 37 points, 5 assists, 16 rebounds.
Wow.
Huge game. And then that sixth and deciding game, 28 points, 7 assists, and 9 rebounds.
So on a game where it's all about Terrence Mann, and it should be, Paul George still had a 28, 7, and 9 game?
That is right. Jeez. And three steals.
Got to tip your hat to him.
Paul George showed why there was, what was it, last year or 2 years ago that Paul George was up for Defensive Player of the Year? Or was in the conversation of it? Maybe it's been a couple years ago. You know, he can turn on the juice that way. And that's hard, because when the Clippers were here for those first two home games, you know,
Jazz got after him.
Jazz fan rolled it out pretty heavily for him. Rightfully so. Yep. Needed to happen. And they did it in a respectful way, which Jazz fans did a great job and loved everything that Vivint Arena brought. But hats off to Paul George, man. That was not an easy series to fight through. That all of the noise and losing Kawhi Leonard and all of the things that were stacked up against him, and he did it. Hats off to him. Got to recognize it when you see it.
So did you really think you'd get across the border, though? Like, you really felt like...
Like, 1,000%. I had zero hesitation.
See, I just, like, you asked me earlier in the show, did I know that the U.S.-Canadian border was completely closed? And I don't, like, I knew at one point, but I kind of thought they'd walked it back a little bit, but I still don't think I would have.
You wouldn't have
tried it?
Okay, let's say you got Elsie in the car.
Yeah.
Jenny. And the three boys. And you just finished a great tour of Fort Niagara.
Yeah.
And had a blast. But you've got some time. And you, by the way, from Fort Niagara, you can see Toronto across Lake Ontario.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, so we were in the fort, and we were looking at the Toronto skyline across Lake Ontario.
So it's over there just teasing you. Like,
yeah, which, by the way,
it's
just like a little tiny faded skyline out there. But it's like, oh, we want to go see that. We're like, let's get in the car and go. We got the entire evening.
Did anybody say, like, hey, maybe we shouldn't?
Yes, my wife.
Okay.
And my mom subtly hinted at it. But we didn't know that it would result in about a two-hour confinement.
Well, then the problem is everybody's hungry and they're grumpy and you've been stuck in the car.
And kids get nervous.
Oh, yeah.
You know, when they see officers from another country that are carrying guns.
But they're still Canadian. I mean, it's like,
what are they going to do, tickle you to death?
Yeah.
What are they going to do, strap you to a tree and tickle your toes?
You've been convicted and you have been sentenced to 10 lashes with a pillow. Yeah, hoser. Take off, eh? Yeah. My brother's drunk.
I'd kiss you, but I got puke breath. How come every time we talk about Canada, we have to talk Strange Brew?
You have to talk Strange Brew. Oh, boy.
Has that movie held up? Have you watched that recently?
I watched it a few years ago, and it has not held up at all.
It has not held up?
No. Oh. I don't even think it held up very well when it was...
when it was released.
Yeah. I mean, the dude drank a whole vat of beer and then puts out a fire with it.
Yeah. The whole hockey thing at the end. Scotty, PSA to everybody, the Canadian border's closed, man. And they're not talking like, hey, come and see if you can get in. They're like, hey, don't even be stupid and approach us. I do want you to know, though, as I noticed the empty corridor that led up to the border, and there was only one other car that was trying to get into Canada, and there was a little thing telling me in my mind, like, this doesn't look so good.
Don't look right.
There was a sign that said, no U-turns past this point. You must proceed through customs. Like, it's...
So you had no choice.
I had no choice. No. Couldn't have U-turned if I wanted. But the harassment that my family and I received of, are you dumb? You're just stupid? Did you not know that it's almost been 500 days since we're not letting a single American in this country?
So there's no way for me to get into Canada?
No, not
a
way.
Just a random American citizen.
In fact, there are Americans that have lake properties, boats, stuff up there. They can't get to it. They can't get in there.
It seems a little excessive, don't you think?
Well, seeing as how our country is like, hey, bring them on. Anybody in Canada need to come down, come on in. It's like, well, let's serve it back to them.
Yeah.
Well, look, we've got a better place than they got. Let's shut our borders down and see how quick. They're like, I don't know if they're still upset about the pipeline thing. I don't know what's going on up there, but they're rude. And it's shut. It's stone cold shut.
Those Tim Horton donuts are pretty good, though. It might be worth trying to get over the border.
Oh, man. I had all my persuasive tactics going. I even showed him my old Indianapolis ID and was like,
smart. You did not.
No,
did
I
you really?
No.
Oh, no. Man.
I pulled out my old NFLPA's card and was like, hey, would you take? Oh, sorry. That's my old, my NFL card. Sorry.
Did you play for the Blue Bombers? No, I played for the Colts. We don't want you.
Did you just go, Canadian League.
Yeah.
It's shut down, man.
Wow.
I'm still shocked. How do we not know as a country like that it is shut down, shut down? We had all the proper paperwork. We had it all like in life.
You should have slipped her like a loonie or a toonie. That's what they call their coins up there.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I think.
What's a loonie? $2? One and a two. Well, two. Okay, there you go.
I think George Washington will have something to say about this. Slide a dollar bill over.
Yeah, come on.
They weren't taking money or anything. They weren't cracking a smile either.
That's the most surprising thing. Because Canadians are supposed to be nice.
Oh, they weren't nice at all.
That's yeah, but they don't have a sense of humor.
No. I mean, look, we had Jim Carrey came from Canada.
So did John Candy, didn't he?
John Candy, I think. I don't know.
Dan Aykroyd?
Who's the married an axe murderer?
Mike Myers.
From Canada.
Isn't Rubes from Canada?
Rubes? Oh, Greg Rubel, yeah.
All the best Canadians come from Canada.
Who said that? Was that Austin?
Oh, Lloyd, you've got that on the sound bar. It's somewhere. It was Austin.
Was it Austin?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I forgot about that.
He was straight up serious about it, too.
All the best Canadians come from Canada. Hey, Greg pounced on it, too.
Yeah, he did. Greg wasn't. Look, Greg's quick-witted, man.
Oh, yeah, he is.
Now, he's a dry sense of
humor.
Yeah,
he'll cut you.
He'll cut you down to the bone if he has to. And he got Austin. It was worse than the pork chop Womack moment.
Oh, man. Not quite as bad as the wheelchair, but.
No, but a pretty rough moment nonetheless. What other great Canadians are they? Are there?
Celine Dion is Canadian, I believe.
I'm
just trying to think of famous. I'm not saying she's high on the list.
I don't know if that's true. Is she really Canadian?
I think so. Because she's like, I think she's French-Canadian.
There was a rumor that Hacksaw Jim Duggan of the WWE, even though he carried an American flag, that he's Canadian. I think that got defunct.
All right, here we go. Jim Carrey, Celine Dion, Justin Bieber is Canadian. Ryan Gosling, Michael J. Fox, Ryan Reynolds.
Whoa, wait. I didn't realize they had this much talent.
Is Keanu Reeves Canadian, too?
They were sending down south.
Alanis Morissette. Oh,
yeah. No way Shania Twain is Canadian.
Yeah, she is. Yeah,
I'm not taking that.
Actually, well, I don't know.
Where do most of the good Canadians come from?
Matthew Perry. Phil Hartman, rest in peace. Your favorite, Katie Lang.
I love Constant Cravings. Katie Lang's my favorite.
I know she is.
Constant Cravings.
Wait a minute. Dwayne Johnson's? No, he's not.
The Rock?
The Rock cannot be Canadian.
Seth Rogen being Canadian totally makes sense. Drake being Canadian makes sense.
Yeah.
I cannot believe the amount of famous people from Canada. Keanu. Rachel McAdams.
Yeah, this is stupid. Dwayne Johnson was born in Hayward, California. Why is he on the list?
Yeah, why is he on the list? We did not trade
His
him.
Dad was from Nova Scotia, so I think they're saying he was born half Canadian. So yeah, let's take that one with a grain of salt.
One third of the Three Amigos is from Canada, Martin Short.
So there you go.
But no, seriously, where do the best Canadians? Where do they come from? Most of them,
Canada.
They do.
Yeah. We're all just trying to stall for the drop.
Sounds to me like Austin may have buried that very deep.
Did Austin delete that?
Oh. We don't have it?
I like that they made a promo out of that. That's awesome. All right. Hands and Scotty here on 97.5, 1280 The Zone. Coming up next, we'll announce number 53 in the top 60 and 60. There will be a fan base that will not be happy about this. And I think they probably have a pretty good point. We will talk about that next. Also, another opportunity for you to recap today's show. It's a Total Recall coming up next. This is 97.5, 1280 The Zone.
This is DJ and PK.
And to think that as far as Joe, I'm largely responsible. I may not win any awards, Dave, but it gives me a sense of great pride knowing, yeah, I don't feed the naked, but in a sense, I've helped facilitate a connection. So I can feel good about it, you know, a little bit. Not quite like you, but I think I can feel good about it.
You're not feeding the hungry, but you are entertaining the bored. So there's that. There's somebody stuck in traffic, stressed, the weather's bad, you know.
So what do?
You entertain the bored.
Catch DJ and PK mornings from 6 till 10 on 97.5 1280 The Zone and The Zone Sports Network.
Hans and Scotty here on 97.5 1280 The Zone and The Zone Sports Network. Little late getting into the segment, so let's get to it. It is time for today's selection in the top 60 in 60.
This is the top 60 in 60. As the Zone counts you down to the start of the 2021 college football season.
We're gonna have a good time.
And now, it's time for today's selection. Our next selection features a dynamic defensive force who's made a quick impression on Mountain West Conference offenses during his first 2 years in Logan. At number 53, from Utah State University, 6'2", 230-pound linebacker, A.J. Vongpachaw. Utah State University head coach, Blake Anderson.
AJ had a great spring for us, very versatile, can play in the box, can play off the edge, can see a lot of sub-package work for him, make it tough to find out exactly where he's going to be. He's physical enough to be at the point of attack, but he's also fast enough to cover in space, and he is super, super smart. And I think it's a big key for linebackers and guys on that second level to make sure everybody's moving in the right direction. So a huge future for him.
This is the Top 60 in 60, presented by Cypress Credit Union and Icon on 97.5 1280 The Zone and The Zone Sports Network.
Ooh, boy, Aggie fans are going to get a little salty over this one, and probably so. This is a guy that had Utah State played a full season last year, he would have been a 100-tackle guy. Led the team with 50 tackles in six games, had, I want to say, seven TFLs, three sacks. Was a dynamic player for that defense that had some struggles last year, but he is a budding superstar for that Utah State defense. Averaged nearly nine tackles a game, again, in those six games that he played last year. Was one of a consistent force. I probably would have had him in the high 20s, low 30s, and I think the sky's the limit. You're going to couple him with Justin Rice, who I think is going to be a really tremendous player for Utah State. And they've got a chance to be really, really good this year defensively.
What year is Vongpachaw?
He'll be going into his junior year. So he'll have, if you had the COVID year, he has 3 years to play.
So he's still very young.
Yeah.
Maybe that's the reason he got overlooked just a little bit. But when you see him on the field, you can see his movement. You know that this guy's a true player. I think I would have probably put him right in that 32 to 34 mark,
yep,
right in there. And I think that he could grow from that. I think at the end of the season, he's the type of guy at the end of the season you might be slotting him into the 20 to 24 mark.
Yep.
Because if he takes the steps that we're all expecting him to take, he should have a notable, stellar career.
And that's essentially what I believe is going to happen. I think this defense isn't really is about speed and is about athleticism, and he's got both of those. He's going to need the big guys up front to allow him to roam sideline to sideline. But if they can get that and keep some bodies off him from getting to the second level, he's a finisher, good open field tackler, fierce tackler, and does a tremendous job for that defense.
Did they use him in the time that they did play? Did they use him a lot in blitzing?
Yeah, a lot.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's why the name's so familiar to me.
Well, and that's why, you heard Blake Anderson say, look, you can put him in the box, you can put him outside, he can cover a little bit if he needs to, somebody coming out of the backfield. There's a lot of things he can do really well, but they'd like to line him. At least, I don't know what the new defense will do, but Gary liked to line him up in the box and let him blitz a little bit.
I think he's going to be a special player. And probably there's going to be some people eating their votes there.
Probably. And I think a lot of it just comes down to, you know, look, it was a weird season last year. You didn't get a chance to see a lot of these guys. And, you know, in a short amount of time with six games. And but yeah, if you look at his stats, you can tell this guy has a chance to be really good. All right, well, he is good. Has a chance to be a really special player. All right, time for Total Recall, brought to you by Angora Solutions. From concept to product launch, Angora can help you build a stable revenue stream via your own Amazon e-commerce platform. Find out more at angora.solutions. Let's go back to our conversation with Brian Fisher from Athlon Sports, who talked about a really big ruling from the Supreme Court today against the NCAA.
Yeah, I think everybody kind of sees that 9-0 ruling, and certainly it was a big blow for the NCAA. You know, I think that there's little question that this was a case, you know, even going back, you know, almost a decade. You know, everybody kind of pointed to this being a critical case in terms of, you know, what's happening in the day-to-day and what's happening in kind of the broader picture with regards to the NCAA. And frankly, it's a huge blow for Mark Emmert and his staff in Indianapolis. And, you know, for the athletes themselves, you know, I think the ruling itself, while it was 9-0, it was kind of specific. You know, it was kind of limited to educational rewards, you know, things like schools giving out laptops to athletes, you know, postgraduate scholarships, you know, so they can go to grad school, you know, things like that. You know, that is really what the case was about, and limited to certainly the antitrust issues that this entire lawsuit was based on. But, you know, the fallout from not only this ruling, but kind of subsequent issues that are going to pop up here is, you know, this is really kind of opening the doors to athletes being compensated much more beyond just that scholarship that they're getting. And I think that's where, you know, there's certainly some fretting from the folks in Indianapolis about how wide a berth the Supreme Court has just given them. But, you know, the bottom line is this is a huge case and one that will have a lasting impact for certainly the next decade and beyond.
I played major college football back in the late 90s, early 2000s, and I guess my question is, what the heck took so long? Like, what was it that finally tipped it one way or the other? Because we knew back in the day those TV contracts were worth a lot of money and coaches were getting paid a lot of money, but what was it that finally tipped it towards the players' favor in the ruling?
Well, I mean, this is obviously something that has been in the works for a long time. I mean, you go back, the O'Bannon case was decided back in 2014. This is kind of a case that has been in the works basically since then as well. There's even another big legal case the NCAA is going to have to deal with on name, image, and likeness coming down the pipe as well. And, you know, really just it kind of goes to show that the leadership of college athletics has been asleep at the wheel. You know, that they've the NCAA, Mark Emmert, all the people in charge of really running, you know, sports in general in this country could have gotten out ahead of this issue years ago, you know, back when you were playing and or even in the subsequent years. But they didn't. And that's why this has kind of gone through the legal courts and is basically forcing them to kind of open up. And so I think that's, you know, really when you hear the criticism of Mark Emmert, it's really for being asleep on the wheel. That they could have addressed a lot of the issues on much more favorable terms than what they got right now from the Supreme Court ruling years ago, and they simply didn't. And so they took a chance on working its way through the court system. It obviously did not come out the way they wanted, and as a result, you're going to see some big foundational changes in terms of how athletes are compensated going forward and how really kind of modern college athletics is going to proceed both from a funding standpoint and from a day-to-day standpoint as well.
So there you go. Great conversation. If you missed that, go to our website, 1280thezone.com. Wrap things up? Sorry.
No, maybe we'll just wrap things up coming up next with this BYU locker room talk.
We'll talk about it next. Hans and Scotty, this is 97.5, 1280 The Zone.
The Big Show. The Big Show. With Jake Scott and Gordon Monson.
David Locke with us. How was it traveling with the team again and getting out there and calling it on the road?
It was great. To have your employer respect what you do and give you a chance to be great. I thank the Jazz tremendously for having the respect to broadcasters and the job we do to allow us to do it the best we can and bring the fans the best game that we could. Sometimes despair brings you the biggest joy, right? And honestly, walking into the Staples Center was a really emotional moment. I didn't know if we'd ever do it again. This last 2 weeks, being in the arena when the crowd erupted in Game 5 against Memphis, to be in a full house against the Clippers, and to be back on the road, being able to do your job. These have been some of my most favorite teams I've ever called in my life.
Catch the Big Show weekdays from 2 to 7, presented by Big O Tires, the team you trust, on 97.5 1280 The Zone and The Zone Sports Network.
Ninety-seven-five, 1280 The Zone and The Zone Sports Network. Hans Olsen, Scott Girard. Hey, by the way, I've got a story here for you that I think is really important. Before we do that, though, I need to talk about our good friends over at Rough Tough. We had so much fun hanging out with those guys. Remember, they set the standard for custom seat covers for your cars, trucks, SUVs, and UTVs. Get the best-fitting seat covers to fit the make and model of your vehicle and do business with a Utah company that's been around since 1976. It's roughtough.com. That's roughtough.com. R-U-F-F-T-U-F-F.com. Hey, I just flipped over to CNN during the break, and I think somebody in the United States government was listening to you because the United States has now extended its travel I don't want to say ban, but travel restrictions to Canada and the United States and Mexico.
Oh, good.
So it's like, all right, you're not letting Hans Olsen in? Well, we're not letting you in.
I'm glad to hear this. Eye for an eye.
And I guess that was actually a pretty big story. Maybe that's why, because when did you try to go in to Canada? What day last week? Was it Friday?
That would have been Friday.
Well, on Friday, Canadian Minister of Public Safety
this
and Emergency.
Is not true.
Look at this.
Scotty, this cannot be true.
On Friday, Canadian Minister of Public Safety and Emergency Preparedness, Bill Blair, announced that Canada had extended its COVID-19 restrictions on non-essential international travel until July 21st. So the day you tried to get in was the same day that Canada announced that they weren't letting people in until July 21st.
Me trying to get in to get some poutine is a non-essential travel?
I think that's essential. You've never had it before. Right?
I've never had it. But the customs, the border control didn't want to hear anything about it.
I love it. The same day where they made this big announcement, like, nobody can come in until July 21st. Hans is like, hey, anybody home?
There's your boy. Hey, everybody, I'm here to go to Toronto for some food.
It's fries and gravy and cheese. I want to try it. It sounds really good.
I've got 7 people in the car. And they're looking at me like, now what are you doing? I just want some fries with gravy. That's it. Is that too much to ask? Yes, it is.
You've not watched the news today? Hey, look, and I didn't know about this either. I'm just reading the story. So.
Well, I would love to take a poll on how many people knew that it wasn't like hey, we're kind of shut down here at the border, but we'll let you in for some food. It's like, unless you're dying and you're half Canadian, we're not letting you in.
Yeah.
That's how strict it is at the border.
So, hey, BYU got some new locker rooms. You like them?
Yeah, they're really nice. I mean, what can you say? That is, they got all the bells and whistles. I'm starting to now understand how my uncles felt when I was going into college football. Because Merlin Olsen, Phil Olsen, Orrin Olsen, all those guys, all my uncles that had played college ball and even played in the NFL for years. You know, they all saw that new BYU locker room that I stepped into in 1996.
Yeah.
And they were like, well, you don't even understand that we had an old train box car that was put out there. And like, these guys were dressing in old box cars.
It's funny because it's true.
Yeah. They were getting, they basically were throwing on their practice gear out behind the dugout.
Yeah.
And getting ready for practices. And the year that I went to BYU in 1996, they'd rebuilt those locker rooms, and they were gorgeous at that time, at the state of the art. And so was our training room facilities. And our weight room was all new within the last 3 years of me getting there.
Really?
Yeah, so it was all – and it did play a part in recruiting. It was really nice to step in there and be like, well, this is incredible. It was not the deciding factor because Nebraska made all of BYU stuff look piddly.
Yeah.
When I went out to the recruiting trip out there. So did Washington State. Washington State had great stuff.
Well, they were just coming off Ryan Leaf and Rose Bowls at that point.
Yeah, and Washington was really nice. But BYU, well done. You guys, that is a nice-looking locker room. And, you know, yeah, I could sit here and make fun of all these up-and-coming athletes getting all the bells and whistles and catered to. I can make fun of all that. But the truth of it is, Scotty, this is the nature of the race, man. And if you're not in the race, you're out of it.
Yeah. It's like, look, you know, you remodel your kitchen and then, you know, 7-8 years later, like, hey, you know what? Maybe we need to do this again. I mean, it's never ending. And you got to keep up.
And look, Weber State redoing their locker rooms and having nicer locker rooms than BYU, it was not going to sit well.
Yeah.
And BYU knew that Weber State's locker rooms were nicer.
Yeah.
And well, so wasn't they're there like, hey, let's go.
Wasn't there a situation last year, too, where Weber State had their new locker rooms, they were sending pictures out of it, and then BYU was working on some administrative offices?
Yes.
And the players started barking about that?
Yep, that's right. I'd forgotten about that.
Well, administrative offices are important, too.
No, they're really not. Those guys should be in a boxcar. Be happy you're getting paid to do what you do.
And paid a lot, too.
Paid a lot.
Yeah. Live here at Larry H. Miller Used Car Supermarket. Hands wrapping things up still. If you want to sneak in here in the next few minutes or so, you can grab some Jazz gear. But more importantly, get some money for your car.
That's the big thing, man. Your car is worth more now than it ever has been. I know Scotty and I are very hesitant to use the word equity when you're talking about a car.
Appreciation.
Appreciation and equity. Your car is appreciated. Your car is worth more now than it ever has been. You might have bought it 5-6 months ago and put 20,000 miles on it. It's worth more now than when you bought it. So take it in and see what you could get for it. Make some money on that vehicle. Start at LHMUsedCars.com. Find a location near you. Guys, when it comes to selling back your car, Larry H. Miller Used Car Supermarket does it better, faster. You're going to get more money for your vehicle. And every one of their dealerships across the Wasatch Front are taking those cars back up by buybacks. Get in there and see what you can get for your vehicle.
It's all right here at Larry H. Miller Used Car Supermarket. Back with you tomorrow. Man, it's good to have you back, though.
It's fun
I'm
to
sorry
be back.
For all the things Lloyd said and did today.
And while I was gone.
I think we were pretty good while you were gone.
Yeah, I didn't get a call.
Lloyd, I don't think, a little bit on the Jazz losing streak, but for the most part, and even the guys down at BYU were pretty good. Like, I talked to A-Rod, and he's like, hey, look, you guys need vacations, too. Like, A-Rod wasn't piling on.
I thought he was going to beat me up pretty good.
Yeah. We didn't get – Kalani slipped down to the Big Show. Had I got Kalani, then that might have been
he would have torched me.
Yeah.
He would have torched me. We do need to revisit some of that BYU media day tomorrow.
Yep. I think it was pretty clear who the quarterback's going to be, too.
Yeah.
It's all right here. Hans and Scotty, back with you tomorrow. Big Show next here on the Zone Sports Network.